Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Radio for Your Mind. Gosh, I hope you guys had a rockin' blast weekend. I know I did. I got to see my youngest grandbaby. And little Ashton is 15 months old. We had a wonderful time with her. All my grandbabies. Basically, we're raising what's known as Irish triplets. And it's anytime you have nieces, nephews, cousins that are within a 1 to 2 year period. And in this case here, we've got two of them that are 3 months apart and one of them that is about a year younger. And it's just, it's a blessing. It's one of the, it is part of my success. But today we are starting a brand new series. And I got this idea for this series after really going through Tom Hopp's book and Lisa Jimenez's book and said, you know what, we've given some really good meat and potatoes. But now we need to get into the true backstory. What does it take for you to be able to reach success? The only way to know that is to be able to personally define success. Now, I'd love to tell you this is a brand new book from Maxwell. It's not. As a matter of fact, this is a reprint. The new book is entitled Your Roadmap for Success. You can get there from here. It came out in 2002. I had the privilege of going through, I've never missed a book when John's written them, and I got this first book of his in 1997. It was called The Success Journey, The Purpose of Living Your Dreams. And folks, my original copy is just tore up with stuff. And it was through this book, through this, that I was able to put my personal success plan together, and I carry it with me everywhere. As a matter of fact, it's an 8.5 by 11 binder. I update it every 6 months, and I go forward. And that's why I thought today is a great day for us to start this. And chapter one, and in John's books, there's a lot of times you guys can just listen. You know, you can be on your iPod, your iPad, stuff like that, your iPhones, and you just listen to this. Today, you're going to have to write some stuff down. Maxwell is a coach. And if you've ever had a coach, especially at a collegiate or a professional level, you know they hand you out a notebook, and then they want you to dig into it, and they want you to write in it. Well, that's what this is. Today's chapter is called The Journey is More Fun If You Know Where You're Going. John opens this chapter up talking about what he read in Success Magazine, and I find this interesting. He said, several years ago, I was thumbing through Success Magazine, and I came across a study by Gallup. And what they did was they had gone out and they did a survey on what success meant to people. He goes, man, I got excited. He goes, their answers fell into 12 categories, but the number one answer was good health. 58% of people identified with success over everything else if they had a healthy lifestyle. But yet, man, it's kind of funny because, you know, he wrote that in 1997, and yet look at us today. We're an obese nation, and we've got to get this back. Here's what I underlined, though. This is what was powerful. I've discovered that people often find it hard to define success. But if you don't know what success is, how will you ever achieve it? That's why I want to help identify a definition for success. Success is a journey. Now, that's nothing rocket science. That's nothing that we haven't known already. Here's what we've got to look at, though. If we know success is a journey, why success wrong? Why is it that we see success as something completely different? That's going to be the question here. John goes on to write about in this story about how they pulled everybody together at Enjoy back in 1985. Well, actually, it was in 1995, about 10 years after they'd started. And he told them, in a year's time, we're going to be moving to Atlanta. And they literally moved the whole company to Atlanta a year after they made this announcement. Through this book, we're going to learn which ones of those people that had been with him in those early days went with him to Atlanta. I'll share some inside stories because of Catalyst of which ones have been with him now and which ones have gone on to launch their own organizations or ministries. See, sometimes I think because we don't realize that success is a journey, that we think when we define success to people that everybody will want to go along with us. But not everybody's willing to take the journey, and that's the first thing that we've got to realize. Whether you're building a network marketing organization, whether you're trying to launch a network marketing company, whether you're listening to this and you're you're out there building a brick and mortar business or you work blue collar, not everybody will want to go on your journey. John writes this: "We weren't sure what kind of reaction we would get from our staff. We were proposing a major move that would radically change their lives. What a surprise it was when 90% of the team said they would move or at least consider moving to Atlanta. They were willing to take the trip." That got me thinking, why were so many of them willing to be uprooted, leaving behind everything that was familiar, including families and friends, to move all the way across the country? I want to flip this a little bit. Because I know that most of this show is listened to by direct marketers, let me ask you this question. Maybe this will fit more at home with you guys. Why is it that when you decide as a leader, it's time to switch marketing companies, it's time to find a new vehicle in which to succeed at fulfilling our journey, why is it that some go with you and some don't? Why is it that some people like a Brig Hart or an Orrin Woodward or a Hubert Humphrey can go out there and leave their nest egg, leave that practice company and go on somewhere else? Why is it that some people like Mark Jarvis can rally his front level and say, we're going to go launch our own company and go out there and do that? John gives four reasons, and I have to agree with him on these. Write these down, please. This can be an eye-opener for you. Number one, we give them a picture of where they're going. See, when Orrin Woodward got up and decided he was leaving Amway to go to Monavie, he'd painted a picture. When Brig Hart said, I'm leaving Amway to go to Monavie, he painted a big picture. When Mark Jarvis said, I'm leaving when I'm leaving Ameriplan and I'm going to build Zervita, he gave them a plan. When Hubert Humphrey said, we're leaving A.L. Williams, Primerica, and we're going to build World Marketing Alliance, he painted a picture of where they were going. The second reason, we answered their questions. When these top leaders draw in their top generals and they say, here's what we're doing, they answer the questions. They give the questions to their top field leaders, the ones that have the most influence, so that they can go out there and in turn pass the information on. Most of the time, if this is done correctly, the leaders know in advance of when the troops know what's going to happen next. That way you can find the buy-in. You can find those that are not really wanting to leave, and you can say, we respect you and you're going to stay, so we're going to move you over here to where you can take care of all those that are left, and we're going to move over here. See, that's so important, folks. Number three, this is one of the big ones. The reason that 90% of John's team was willing to go from the West Coast to basically the East Coast in Atlanta is because they had experienced personal success in their lives. If you're going to tell your team we're moving from Monavie to XYZ Company, we're moving from Zango to XYZ Company, we're moving from here to there, the ones that are going to go with you are the ones that have personally had success because of your tutelage, because of your coaching, because of something you have said. They have experienced life change. If they have not experienced life change from you as the leader or one of your top generals, and they have identified that life change with the brand in which they were marketing for, they will not leave. And most times they will make disparaging comments about you and your organization. Number four, they were no longer the same and wanted to continue to have significance in their lives. I watched this with Art Williams. People rallied around Art Williams because their life changed and they felt like they had gained some significance. They did work within their communities. They did work at their careers. Some of them never succeeded at A.L. Williams, but they succeeded at their career, and they wanted to hang out with Art, and they've still been with him today. You can see it whenever I blog about him or I write about him on Facebook. People love him because they felt like he helped them change their lives. See, that's the key. John writes this, and I think this is great. Success is for everyone. Not everyone is going to gain it, but most of the reasons they don't is because they have the wrong picture, the wrong definition of what success is. Listen to what John writes. The problem for most people who want to be successful is not that they can't achieve success. The main obstacle for them is that they misunderstand success. Melanie Babloch says, one of the most common mistakes and one of the costliest is thinking that success is due to some genius, some magic, something of which we do not possess. What is success? What does it look like? Most people have a vague picture of what it means to be successful. The person that looks something like a Bill Gates, an Arnold Schwarzenegger, an Angelina Jolie, an Albert Einstein, a Donald Trump, even Mother Teresa. But success is not a person. See, that's the problem. We have this picture sometimes. Let's look at what John shows as a traditional thought process of what success is. The first heading that he puts down here is wealth. People believe that wealth means that people are successful. Well, let's look at something. This is what John writes. Industrialist John D. Rockefeller, a man so rich that he gave away more than $350 million in his lifetime, was once asked how much money would it take to satisfy him. He replied, just a little bit more. King Solomon of the ancient Israel, said to be the wisest who ever lived and one of the richest, if not the richest, asserted, whoever loves money never has money enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. Wow. Now that's two different people. One, an ancient Hebrew king. The other one, a man that helped really create the foundation in the industrial age. But listen to this story. Wealth and what it brings are at best fleeting. For example, in 1923, a small group of the world's wealthiest men met at the Edgewater Beach Hotel in Chicago, Illinois. They were the who's who of wealth and power. At that time, they controlled more money than the total amount contained in the U.S. Treasury. Here is a list of the men that were there and what happened to them. Charles Schwab, the president of the largest independent steel company in the world at the time, died dead broke. Arthur Cutten, greatest of the wheat speculators, died abroad insolvent. Richard Whitney, president of the New York Stock Exchange, died just after being released from the Sing Sing prison. Albert Fall, member of the U.S. president's cabinet, was pardoned from prison so he could die at home. Jess Livermore, greatest bear investor on Wall Street, committed suicide. Leon Frazier, president of the Bank of International Settlements, committed suicide. Ivor Kruger, head of the world's greatest monopoly, committed suicide. Even the great millionaire Aristotle Onassis, who retained his wealth and died at the ripe old age, recognized that money isn't the same as success. He maintained that after you reach a certain point, money becomes unimportant. What matters is success. Now listen to this a minute. Here's what happens. When we take and we look at that situation, this is what we see. We think wealth is success. Wrong. We think that we'll get a special feeling, that when we achieve something, that something inside of us will just change. Think about this for a minute. How many times have you gone down the road and you've seen the hottest couple under the sun? I mean, you and your wife both are sitting there, or your girlfriend, you're saying, dog, she is hot. And your lady says, you know what, he is one stud of a looking guy. And you think they have success on the outside, and the next thing you know, they're getting a divorce, or they've split up. See, it isn't a special feeling. It isn't that you grab something, and all of a sudden you feel successful. If you haven't fixed the underlying fears, the limiting beliefs that Tom Hopp talks about and that Lisa Jimenez talks about, then you cannot have this feeling. You will always be lacking something. Sometimes that's why very successful billionaires always are taking risks, like who's the gentleman who owns Virgin Records, Mr. Branson. You know, he's always out there doing something crazy. And they say the reason that is because it isn't about the money. They have to do something. They're reaching deep and they can't find it. John writes this: if you make happiness your goal, you are almost certainly destined to fail. It's a good point. One of the other things that John talks about is that the wrong picture of success is specific and worthwhile possessions. See, people think, if I just get this. Remember when we were a kid, we wanted that special toy, we wanted that special bike, that BB gun, that something. And then when we got it, all of a sudden the new wore off. Do you realize, I think this is one of the things with Hugh Hefner. I'm not, and this, and we're not here to debate whether or not it's morally, ethically right to have women naked in the magazine. Okay, that's not what this show's about. But think about this. He has all these beautiful women around him, but yet he doesn't ever seem to be happy. He marries these beautiful women, and everybody says, oh my gosh, if I was married to her, life would be great. And then he gets divorced from them. So you cannot get success from a possession. It just won't happen. You'll get the possession, it'll get old. You'll try all the plastic surgery. I've got a good friend of mine, or was a good friend. He's no longer a good friend. I haven't seen him in years. He'd find a woman that halfway looked decent, and then he would pay for all the plastic surgery. And then he felt like he owned them. Made them feel good. They looked good. Teeth were fixed. Boobs were bigger. Butt was tighter. Tummy was trimmer. And then he would use it, and he'd say, you're a dirt dog ugly, and if it wasn't for me, you'd still be somebody that was nothing. Possessions won't bring it to you. Power. A lot of people believe that power is there. A good movie called Power with Richard Gere that really shows the underlying of this. Charles McElroy writes, power is usually recognized as an excellent short-term antidepressant. That's probably true. Lord Ashton wrote this, power tends to corrupt and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Abraham Lincoln, one of my heroes, echoed the belief when he said, nearly all men can stand adversity. But if you want to test a man's character, give him power. Power really is a test of character when you think about it. Matter of fact, I see a lot of leaders in network marketing that once they start believing their own press and they get that power and that influence, they fall. You never want that to happen. Another mistake that we have is that we see success as an achievement. Oh, if I just get this destination, if I just get this rank, if I just, and it's never enough. That's why network marketing companies have such a hard time sometimes with compensation plans, and they make these changes because their top leaders make it to the top, and then they still feel like something's missing. And instead of digging deep inside, the companies think, well, if we just trip the trigger a little bit on the compensation plan, maybe it'll help. I've got a good friend of mine that although over the last 25 years they've made a couple of changes to the compensation plan, his main focus during that time period has been to create and build people based on core values, not on the wrong picture of success. So what is the right picture of success? John writes this, listen to this. So how do you get started on the success journey? What does it take to be a success? Two things are required. Number one, the right picture of success. And number two, the right principles for getting there. Write that down. Two things are required, the right picture of success and the right principles to get there. John goes on and writes this. The picture of success isn't the same for any two people because we're all created differently as unique individuals. Now I'm going to stop there. Listen to me. This is where the myth of duplication in network marketing is skewed. See, because of the fact each one of us are made differently, we cannot duplicate an upline to a T or we'd all be robots. That's why whenever you're listening to an upline and they say, just do what I'm telling you to do, and you say, but that doesn't fit my personality, you are dead on. It doesn't mean you don't copy the process. It means that you cannot copy who they are. You have to be you. You have to put your personality into it. Most people do not dig deep enough into the word duplication. Well, first of all, that's if you can find it in the dictionary, okay? Because they don't understand what it's talking about. You can duplicate the process. McDonald's is a prime example. You cannot duplicate the personalities. That's why you walk into one McDonald's and everybody's happy and they're go-lucky and they're right in the middle of the heart of the worst part of town, but yet they're excited. And then you go into a McDonald's that's in the middle of the suburbs in a gated community, and they act like little, well, I can't say that word on the radio, even though it's the internet. They just act awful. You cannot duplicate the personality. we're all unique individuals. But the process is the same for everybody, John writes. It's based on principles that do not change. Success done right, following the process, and we're going to talk about that through the next few days in this book, following the process, and you will reach success at your level, at what you define success at. Now, how do you know? What is it that you can do? What's the process? Write this down. I know we're getting down to the end of the show. Number one, you have to know your purpose. Nothing can take the place of your purpose. Mr. Kaiser, who founded Kaiser Aluminum and Kaiser Permanente Health, wrote this. The evidence is overwhelming that you cannot begin to achieve your best unless you set some aim in life. You have to know your purpose. When I share my definitions of success, I think that you guys will see this. You've got to know, number one, what is it that you're searching for? See, what are you searching for? This is going to help you define your purpose. Why were you created? Look, I don't care if you're Muslim, Hindu, Christian. I don't care what you call it. You can be an atheist. You know you were created for something. You can feel it. So what was it? Do you believe in your potential? See, that's a great question. Do you believe? If you don't, we're going to work through that. And the last thing that John talked about there was to find your purpose is, when do I start? Now, that one's important that you got to listen to as you go through this training with us and this coaching. The second thing, in order to find the right picture of success, is growing to your potential. See, once you've got your purpose, you've got to grow to your potential. Novelist H.G. Wells held that wealth, notoriety, place, and power are no measures of success whatsoever. The only true measure of success is the ratio between what we might have been and what we have become. That's the key to it. Now, underneath the heading, growing to your potential, this is what you have to do. Number one, you've got to concentrate on one main goal. You can't be a jack of all trades, okay? Number two, you've got to concentrate on continual improvement. These radio shows are as much for me as they are for you. I have to go through each and every one of these books with a fine-tooth comb, and I internalize the good ones and spit out the bad ones. You have to. Number three, you got to forget about your past. John writes this. Jack Hayward, pastor of the Church of the Way in Van Nuys, California, commented, "The past is a dead issue, and we can't gain any momentum moving towards tomorrow if we're dragging the past behind us." Look, you can use the past as a flashpoint. It can be a kick in your butt, but you better not dwell on it or you'll never succeed in the future. If there was anybody that should be the least to succeed, it should be me. When you look at my upbringing, when you look at my parents, when you look at how I came into this godforsaken world at the time, I say that because Vietnam was going on, peace, love, and rock and roll. I mean, people thought it was hell in a handbasket, 7-day war, all that crap. When you look at that, and then you look at where I'm at today, it's because I have internalized so much from other people. And it's because I have great friends who went above and beyond the money they could have made and said, "We just want to help." Guys like Tom Hopp, young ladies like Dondi Scamanchi. I couldn't ask for better mentors. This is what it's about. You got to forget your past. And the last thing that you've got to do is you've got to focus on the future. See, that's the key. Focus on where you want to know, go, not where you've been. That's the kicker here. So where did Troy get his idea of success? What is it? You know, the very last thing in this chapter says, sowing seeds that benefit others. John writes this, "When you know your purpose in life and are growing to reach your maximum potential, you're well on your way to becoming a success. But there is one more essential part of the success journey: helping others. Without that aspect, the journey can be lonely and shallow." Last week, I shot a video, the first video of its kind that I've ever put up. It was basically saying, I want guys to come along and gals and partner with me and join my Ambassadors Partners Club. I have a hard time just, I'd never make a good preacher asking people for money, because I can ask people for money and they give it, but I never ask for myself. And it's because I want to serve others, so it's tough for me to say, hey, I need somebody to serve me no matter what the cause. And I had a good friend of mine, somebody that I respect, a powerful leader, call me on the phone and said, dude, I don't care what you need, what's in it for me? I thought, what's in it for me? And I thought of some of that sales training that I'd had where the traditional sales training tells you, well, you've got to find that need in that person's life because they want to know what's in it for them. They don't care about you. They want to know what's in it for them. And I realize this guy's absolutely correct. And for the typical individual, that's what's important. What's in it for me? See, I just don't live my life that way. I don't look at things about what's in it for me. That's why I get myself in all kinds of life adventures that are just so cool. Right now I'm in a custody case fighting for my grandbaby who's 15 months old, has a wonderful attorney on her own, but her parents are in prison, my son and my daughter-in-law. I want what's best for her. She can't fight for herself. So you want to know what we've done? Since April, every other weekend, we make a trip. Our whole family gets in our van and we go north to see a grandbaby. And we send somewhere between $500 and $600 a weekend. What most people make in a week, we're investing in the future of our grandbaby every other weekend as we get visitation rights. And we go up, and I know a lot about Alabama. It's why I do these radio shows, and we get nothing in return. This isn't about, oh, look at Troy. This is about my success journey, because in 1997, when this book came out, and my baby girl was laying on a table having a pediatric surgeon open up her little bitty body and start trying to fix those teeny bitty organs, I started realizing there's a whole hell of a lot more to life than me. And my definition of success, I have two, one for business and one at home. My business one says, living an epic adventure, serving others so that they can reach their life's purpose. My definition of success for my family, for my friends, is having my friends and family know I love and serve them unconditionally. 1997, and I've ceased to live that, which is why sometimes it's hard to be able to mix and say, okay, now I need to go out there and make a living. Which, by the way, we are doing. It's going to be cool. Tom Hopp and Don D and Lisa Jimenez, these are servant leaders that love to make money, but they know it's about serving others also, and that kicks my butt because we all come from different backgrounds. And they're running alongside of me saying, dude, we got some ideas, and it's like, this is rocking. Tomorrow we're picking up in part two or in chapter two. If you love this, if you're getting something out of this already, pass this on to people. Let them know what's here. And it's a selfish promotion. Stay tuned, because by Friday, we will launch what is called the Ambassadors Partners Program. And I'm going to have in there some of the most awesome John Maxwell training that you can't get live anymore, that you can't get on CD. It was customized just for network marketing. And you're going to love it. Tomorrow, chapter two, where would I like to go? Now we start getting into the meat and potatoes. We start digging. We start looking at where we're at. Folks, this is what it's about. Please send me some feedback. If there's ever a book, if there's something you want covered, if you get something out of this, hit us at Facebook. Send an email, you know, to Troy@MLMHelpDesk.com. Send it out here. Let us look at it. We'll get it up on the air, because this is what it's about. If we can help you change your life, if you find some nugget of wisdom, you can go to JohnMaxwellOnLeadership.com. And see what John's up to today. Go buy the book if you haven't already. Buy the workbook, Your Roadmap for Success. Folks, live life like it's an epic adventure. Have a fantastic day, and we'll see you back here in the morning. Radio for your mind. Bye now.